So when I was asked who could do the interview with the great, incomparable funk master, George Clinton, I said there's only one person. Only one person who had that skill set, that insight. And that's my good friend and my brother, James Ntume. My brother, come on out. Yes, sir. And please welcome to the stage, George Clinton!
The second, he was in the second episode.
Brother, 20 years. Yes, sir.
Well, first of all, I just want to say, when you get a chance to interview and have a chance to talk and have a discussion with a man of George's stature and contribution to the music, it's extra special when that person happens to be a friend. I remember the first time before we get into it, I'm going to tell you the first time I saw you, brother. I was with Miles Davis. We were playing Paul's Mall. See, you remember? In Boston.
I was just there night before last.
Okay.
I mean, up and down Boyle Street.
So the hotel, remember, used to be across the street. So we were driving up because it became in the night before. And we're checking in, but we looked over and said, tonight, one night only, Parliament Funkadelic. And I'd heard the rumors. But I had this, you know, me, Miles, Reggie Lucas, Pete Cozy, Michael Henderson. Yeah. We checked in and shot right across there. And like I said, I heard the rumors. But you came out, I think, in a coffin. You had on a Roman short, you know.
Tutu.
And
a diaper.
In a diaper. Right, yeah, Gary. Gary had the diaper. And I think what was happening, I think y'all were rolling with Standing on the Verge. And I'll never forget when it came to the hook. We said, people, what you doing? And you lift up that tutu. And it was just a ding ding there. You said, Standing on the Verge. I mean, the whole joint fell out, man. You know?
And they told me I did shit like that.
See, I don't recall that.
I don't recall that.
But look, before we get started, like I said, we just it's
if it, such a like I said, if it wasn't for flashbacks, I wouldn't have no memory at all.
let's dig this. What is soul? I don't know. Soul is the ham hocks in your cornflakes. Ain't it nasty? What is soul? I don't know. It's the ring around your bathtub. Free your mind and your ass will follow. You remember this one? I have tasted the maggots in the mind of the universe, and I was not offended.
Oh, I knew I had to rise above it all or drown in my own shit.
Woo! That's a flash forward. So, George, let's start here. And I know, man, you've been doing a lot of interviews. You know, the book is out. You know, we've talked, you know, many, many, many times about different subjects musically. But I want to try to cover some things that people may not have asked, because it's more than just the music. George Clinton set up a new business model in black music. And that business model was taking a group and making it an umbrella from which several groups and other artists were created and placing them at different companies at the same time. At the height of that, how many artists were you producing?
Well, probably about 35 at once with all the groups. Because all the groups, you know, Bootsy, the Horny Horns, Fred Mason, them,
Bernie,
Parliament, Funkadelic, Bernie Worrell's group, Eddie Hazel's group, Parlette, Brides of Funkenstein. It was quite a few of us. You know, and then outside of that, you know, we worked with a lot of other groups. Trey Lude, you know, Felipe Wynn, you know. We had quite an army going for a minute.
I want to ask you, for those young people, I think Wu-Tang would be a good example who used that model
they
years
did
later
it,
with hip-hop.
They did it very well. I was going to say that if you didn't cover it.
Well, you know, we eating at the same lunch counter, but go ahead.
No, Wu-Tang made very good use of the concept.
George, could you explain to us, when you were sitting down and this concept was unfolding, nobody else had done that, and I want everybody to be clear. Nobody had ever done that. What pushed you in that direction, and what was the impetus?
Well, it wasn't no group per se. An artist had done it, but a few record companies had done it. Starting with Phil Spector, he had the Rondettes, the Crystals, and his whole entourage, and even Motown with the Motown Review. They had all of their acts traveling together, so it was easy for us having Parliament, then our band Funkadelic. Out of necessity, we ended up with two different groups, not just one group. Parliament couldn't do it because of label commitments. So we used our little brothers. We became their backup singers. You know, put them out front. And so that's 10 of us. When Bootsy came to play with us, we realized he was an artist within himself. He was no Funkadelic. So I told him, you work with me on certain type of sound for Parliament. I'll help you with help you with whatever you want to name your group. We came up Bootsy Rubber Band. So that right away, there's another 10 people. You know, so, and it kept on like that. It kept growing out of necessity. The background singers in the studio became Parlette. And the rest of them became the Brides. So it just kept growing. Every time we turned around, the roadies want to sing. We recorded them. You know, everybody wanted to be on stage, so the best way to keep it all going and give everybody their dream. And after a while, the mothership was flying around for almost 7 years just on the ship, you know, all the way up until Atomic Dog.
Now, one thing you brought up, Bootsy, and one thing you and I and any musician knows who puts a band together or a group, a general is only as great as the soldiers, okay? And you had some soldiers that were some of the most original musicians on this planet. And let's start with Bernie Worrell. How did
you don't have to
go through some stuff that people ain't gonna ask you. We're gonna talk about the soldiers you selected.
Oh yes, Bernie Worrell. That was starting at the height of any place you want to go. We started out with Bernie before he went to Boston to go to school. When he came home from school, we had a hit record, I Just Want to Testify. So he was able to take the kids, Eddie Hazel, Billy Bass, Tiki and Tao, who was just getting started with their instruments. We were able to, while they learned their instruments, Bernie was able to incorporate his classical training right in the midst of all the rock and roll and psychedelic stuff we were playing. We were able to do what King Crimson, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, only a few groups, even in the European section, were doing that. So with Bernie, we were able to train the other musicians to be what Eddie Hazel became. Maggot Brain, Billy Bass, you know, the whole Funkadelic, what they all became, Bernie was the spearhead of that. You know, and from Bernie, all the rest of them developed their talent to become, you know, what Eddie became. And then on top of that, like you said, Bootsy. With Bootsy, he brings his brother, Catfish, you know, and not only that, he brought Fred Wesley and Maceo Parker. With that team right there, you can start a war. Because we had the bomb.
Yeah. let's go back a little bit. Like you made reference to, I Just Want to Testify, which was a huge hit in the black community. I think you had some pop success with that too.
Oh yeah, that was it was a big record. It really was a big record. It was a pop record, you know, one of those that got on CKLW and crossed over. You know, it was a big record, but it's hard to keep getting singles. You know, and after Testify, it was hard to get another hit. We had one called I Bet You, which was very big. I mean, the Jackson 5 covered it after we did it. You know, but like I said, it was just so hard getting singles that I said, forget trying to get a singer. I started going after albums, the way the jazz artists did it, or the way rock and roll was doing it. You know, like Jimmy and all the Cream and all those, they sold albums. So we did first Mama What's a Funkadelic, then Free Your Mind, Your Ass Will Follow. And we tried to go so far away from what was normal that people wouldn't ever want to put us in a bag again. We made a playground for ourselves that to this day, if we do something, they say, well, that's Funkadelic, they can do it. You know, and so that gave us room to try Atomic Dogs, you know, a Flashlight, stuff that had never been done before. We'd do it just because we would try and sell albums and not singles. So we took all kind of chances.
When you were making this transition from basically a singing group, you know, with Testify, we all know there's a process in transition. What were some of the other influences that was coming in?
We just dropped acid.
Well, that's the process. Process.
I mean, I ain't gonna lie. That was overnight. We went to Boston. I was just there. That's why I said about if it wasn't for flashbacks, I wouldn't have no memory. Cause I just saw all of my past the last couple of days while being over at Harvard. Yes, we had a hit record. We went out on one tour all around the country. We got to Boston. The same people y'all met when y'all got there. They turned us out. And we were, I mean, I think I was probably the last standing hippie, you know, up until 4 years ago.
You're still hip.
Oh, no, it's cool. I mean, I don't regret nothing. But we definitely took off, you know, from Boston back in 67. And it was overnight. I mean, from Parliament to doo-wop group, we realized it wasn't going to happen. So we went in and did Free Your Mind in about 2 days. We just went in there, we tripped right through the 2 days, recorded it, mixed it, and by the end of the week, we was putting it out. I think the pictures took longer than the cutting the record. Finding the girl to do the cover. Whatever was on the cover.
You know, since Warrington is here, I don't, you know, Warrington likes to know inside stuff.
Oh, Warrington, Reggie, they knew everything about us. I mean, I think your mother told me, she said, I didn't know what was wrong with my kids. They have posters around their room with a guy with a skirt on, you know, and wigs. So I didn't know what was wrong with him. You know, they've been funky all their life, even in college. intellectual college.
You know, again, we're going to talk about some of the influences that you were absorbing also.
And also leave time for Q&A.
No, man. Anyway. Okay. I tried. You asked me to come over here, right? No, I'm just teasing. I'm just playing. Would you tell or speak to the influence that was on all of us that is not referenced often enough, I think, in all of the music, jazz and everything else? Sun Ra.
All right. Come on.
Let's talk about Sun Ra.
Well, you know, I'm getting that question so much lately. And I didn't even find out about his music till a couple of years before he passed. And I knew the name, and I had started to see the image that, you know, what people said we were about in look and in concept. But I think I probably was out there for real. And I didn't, you know, it's a big galaxy. And I'm into the Dog Star, you know, Sirius. And I forgot he was from Saturn. I think that's where he was coming from. But we didn't happen to bump into each other, you know, but I knew the name. And like I said, even Larry Young. Remember Larry Young?
Oh, come on, yes.
I mean, we grew
great,
up.
Great jazz organist.
We grew up together, and he used to tell me about Sun Ra. But I don't know what I thought he was talking about, because he was out there himself. He's a great organist, you know, one of the great. But I didn't realize until I ran into Sun Ra's band just prior to him passing. And we were getting ready to try to get together and do tours. And I played with almost all the musicians, you know, one place or another, but we never got a chance to meet. I mean, I met him, you know, he used to play right in Detroit, right behind United Sound at the college campus, Wayne State. Right. He was playing there, so I've seen, and he was actually playing the Temptation song, My Girl, from behind the piano. Dun, 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 dun. And that hurt my mind, just trying to figure out how you can, he was out there, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I can understand the relation, like I say, of the look, but I never got a chance.
You know what, that is, for me, this is deep, because it's so much the cosmology, you understand?
Like you said, you spoke Miles, I told Miles the same thing, you lying, you damn lying, you had to, and I didn't get a chance.
George.
Excuse me, I got all his doo-wop records. Sun Ra's, when he was in Chicago doing doo-wop, I had no idea about any of that. I had to go back and do another history lesson, just like I said about Robert Johnson. I had to go back and learn about something that I should have known about.
For those of you who may have not ever heard Sun Ra, you can go to YouTube, put up some of his music, and you'll see what George and I are saying. And even though, you know, you never sat down with him, there's a very intimate.
Oh, I can see that now myself. Yeah.
And let's move to another great musician, Eddie Hazel. You mentioned him. Unsung, one of the greatest guitarists that ever blessed us.
Eddie was unbelievable, because he learned all of that. I mean, he could play blues as a kid, but when he got into Funkadelic and got his new guitar, he learned Jimi Hendrix, Cream within 6 months. I bought all those albums for him at one time. In 67, he sat down and learned while Billy and them could even play a bass. He could strum it, but that was it. They learned all of that by the time Testify was, you know, off the chart, and we needed a second record out. They were playing it. And by the time we did Good Old Funky Music, which was a year and a half, we had the best band around Detroit. And Eddie was spearheading it along, you know, with Bernie always there to help me put what they needed behind them. Eddie, unorthodox as he was the greatest singer. I mean, he sing as good as he can play guitar, but he make his own self cry. he was so passionate. If you listen to some of the, like, you know, some of the songs he did, Let Me Be, just like Glenn Goins. Yeah. Them two and Gary Scheider, all of them they all grew up together. Can you imagine them at 15, all three of them? Because they all were like that at that young age around the barbershop. I basically knew Billy, Billy and Bernie, I knew them. But the other two, Glenn and Eddie, came after we got a hit record.
Let's talk about the barbershop.
Oh, yeah, the barbershop was loaded with them. And we kept kids around. You know, that's how I get my inspiration. From kids. We bought them amps and we let them play, and you get a feel for what's coming next. And that's the way they were. The barbershop was loaded with a bunch of kids till we finally got the community center to give us a place to rehearse. And we had Funkadelic, as one said, with Eddie, Billy, Tal, and Tiki, and Bernie. We had Gary Boogie in the group called U.S. as the second string Funkadelic. And it went on like that. The barbershop was just a place where we turned out good musicians and singers.
George, when you conceived of the whole concept of the funk mob and Funkadelic and Parliament, what there was something obviously you felt wasn't happening. There was some space that wasn't filled in the music, and you felt that need to bring something that had never been heard.
Well, we gravitate to that. We couldn't plan that. There's no way to plan it. It's just what happens as you're trying to survive and stay there. The things you have to do. You know, like when the band members leave and go play with the Temptations, we had to end up getting another band, which was Gary and Boogie. So sounds change with as you change the musicians. And I had to change philosophy just seeing that Motown was on its way to L.A., the European invasion was coming. We had to change if we wanted to stay there. Chamber Brothers was the only model for a black group playing rock and roll.
Time, the famous record, Time.
Yeah. We stole their drummer. Jerome Bigfoot Braley. And yeah, he played with Chamber of the Ass. And when we did Tear the Roof Off, Bootsy and him, and we had a whole new sound. We always got sounds according to what was needed. So it wasn't something like I just sat down and say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Is that this is what we're working with. This is what we're going to use. So I had to figure out what can we do best with what we got. And that itself is a funky concept. I mean, do the best you can and funk it.
One of the things that I've always admired about you, and, you know, having played with Miles for 5 years, there's a certain thing that you see in a visionary. And that is that visionary's ability to embrace whatever's coming and take that thing that's coming and shape it in their own image. You've never been closed to hip-hop. And you know, a lot of the brothers that came along and sisters, when we came along, they heard this new music. And you know, there's some political overtones to why that, because it also was a divide in the young and the old in the community, because we can't leave that out. But you, and many of us, but you in particular, because you were the one that was out front. How do you feel about that music and what you and others have laid down as being the DNA in terms of what sampling was really the transfer of the DNA?
Proud as hell. You know what I'm saying? For real. I mean, think about it. The only way you would hear your music before was on some K-Tel package on TV. That would be the only time you get to hear your song again. When hip-hop came along and I hear them using for segues purposes mainly, get the intro, block them from Needy, and start me myself. And I, it was weird, but, well, I'm in the game. And if I'm in the game, I know how to get mine. You know, so like I said, I rushed and made an album called Sample Some of Disc and Sample Some of That. You know what I'm saying? If I get an opportunity, I'm glad that they did it, sampled it. I'm glad they found a way to keep us, because usually kids don't want to hear their brothers and sisters' music or their mother and father's music. So we were lucky enough when I heard them participating, because we wasn't finished anyway. But you have to get out of there every 4 years, 3 or 4 years, playing obsolescence. Plus kids grow up. They don't want to hear what they big brother. So that's normal. We found a way to circumvent that because we were being involved by way of sampling. I was so glad of that. I made sure that Snoop, Dre, Cube, Humpty, Afrika Bambaataa, I knew where everybody was located, and I made ourselves, available to that. Now, a lot of people around were saying, that ain't music, But I know whenever you hear that, that is the music. When you tempted to say that ain't music, that means your ass is getting old and you need to get out of there. Or shut up and listen to what's coming. Because if you do that, you can quietly stay around. They won't notice your whole ass. If when they do, you'll have found your way in and become part of it. Like trying to show them nothing. I ain't trying. I'm learning what they're doing with my stuff. So I end up sampling my own records. Same way they were doing. If you want to be around, you want to avoid that thing that makes you feel like you're being competitive to the younger ones, because you ain't no competition. It ain't your crowd no more, unless you know how to dance. You can do like Aqua Boogie, dance underwater and not get wet. You can find a rhythm that lets you stay there, but you can't assume that you know shit. What you know is already in your DNA or in the past. It will come around again if you're patient enough to stay around.
Lucky enough
to stay around. It come around again, and when some come new, oh, I know something about that. They might be covering it up with the costume or act, but it's still that same 4-4 that they did in 67 with Motown. You know, when I hear all the new, I can pretty much put my finger on where the record's coming from. When Rihanna had SOS out, I said, this is it. Whoever this person is going to be around. And kids was like, what do you know? Brother Ground, she's still around. Beyonce, on the other hand, I tell you, she will always be around. She is that bad. She is that one for this generation. She is it, without a doubt.
Martin, you want to go to questions?
Yeah, and actually we're going to take two.
So oh, I saw you getting nervous, so I just...
No.
Oh, yeah, I'm wrong with
it. No, we are, baby.
Okay, one here, and that's going to be it. And then before we do that, I need to thank somebody.
Bowlegged Lou.
Bowlegged Lou. and both Cosmic Slav and House Party. We got Bowlegged Lou and George Logan. Please stand up.
Two tears in a bucket.
And also, Paul Anthony came in. Okay, full force. And also, in the first episode, The Space Traders, that's based on a short story by Derek Bell. And his widow's here, Janet. Please stand up. Thank you for that. Okay, one question, two questions. Who got it? You had a mic over
I'll
there,
bro? Oh. Microphone over here.
Yes, sir,
hello?
Brother.
Go ahead. Okay. So I just want to thank both of you guys, because you, James, are my hero. I listened to a cable line, like, religiously. I went to the East. So I saw Sun Ra, and I know the correlation. You actually took the question out of my mouth, because I thought he knew, but I'm glad that he didn't know, because...
But he knew.
Inside.
No, another
yes,
way.
Parallel
another
of
way.
The cosmos. I just wanted to say thank you. I just want to take a picture with you guys. But that's all I want to do. But
on the way out, we did. So we over here. Yep. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, brother.
Who got the mic? Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
I'm just standing by here.
Double up. But go to the mic. Go
one
to
more
mic.
Question.
Y'all got George Clinton here. Y'all need to ask.
Ladies first. Ladies first.
Thank you. So thank you so much for being a part of my life, my father's life. You know, I really appreciate you being here tonight. I'm so excited. But my question is, for all of us young people out here, because I'm not a singer or anything, but for all of us young people out here, like, what advice can you give to us to follow, like, what it is we want to do in life? Because you're really inspirational just being here, but I want your
words. Do the best you can at whatever it is you're trying to do. And funk it. It comes to you. You know, just do the best you can with all your heart. Do that and it'll come.
Thank you.
Dr. Funkenstein, when I was growing up, my child, before I went to sleep, hearing stories about Star Child and certain noise. Those were what kept me up. I would draw pictures of all those stories. I just wanted to hear a little bit, where did that opera, where did that story come from? Like, I still believe Star Child's gonna come back one day.
Oh, you're right. He's on his way now. Yeah. Sir Nose is still growing. Overton Lord and Pedro Bell and Ronald Edwards are the artists.
And Pedro's passed, right?
Pedro just drew the new album cover for the book, for the album that's in the book called Shake the Gate. That's the newest Funkadelic album with 33 songs on it. Pedro did the album cover. Oh, yeah. Those stories, like I said, Overton Lord, myself did the Parliament, Sir Nose, and Star Child, and Dr. Funkenstein. Pedro did the Cosmic Slop. And all the Funkadelic Standing on the Verge covers. Ronald Edwards did Parlette in the Horny Horns. So we have some good artists that's still around, that's part of the family, that helped me do all those stories, you know, interpret what I was talking about. We have three great illustrators.
George, it's been more than a pleasure, brother. It's been an experience again. Thank y'all very much.
Yes. George.